Yes, we can be. All right, so tonight is another class on our book, The Intimate Way of Zen by James Ishmael Ford. And I am in the cloud zendo because I have a cold. So hopefully I will be able to speak all evening without coughing or blowing my nose, but if I need to, at least I won't be spreading my germs. So tonight, I did mean to pull up the ox hoarding pictures so I could share them. I thought this would have ox herding pictures on it. Well, I guess I'll do without. So this book is loosely based on the 10 ox herding pictures, which describe an arc of practice. And the three chapters that we're not going to cover all three chapters tonight, but the three chapters that were on the reading list for tonight are about the, I think it's, yes, it's the seventh picture. So throughout this story, this little the protagonist of the pictures is searching for the ox being enlightenment or awakening or the great mystery or whatever it is our heart is searching for. The protagonist sees and then sees the footprints of the ox, then catches a glimpse of the ox, then manages to capture the ox, then manages to tame the ox, then is riding the ox back home. And now this in the seventh picture, we see the protagonist just sitting on the front step of his hut. There's no ox, and the poem for it is Reaching Home on the Back of the Ox. Rest now, the ox forgotten, taking a nap under the noon sun, whip and rope abandoned behind the hut. So, if we look at these pictures as being a way to describe the process of awakening, I think it's wonderful. They're very useful if we, especially if we think of it as this isn't, awakening is not an all or nothing thing. Mean, there's a little bit of truth to it if we look at these pictures as describing our whole life, the whole arc of our spiritual practice. But really, if you think of awakening as being, know, a little bit at a time, or as I've said before, our life is full of enlightenments, that we can experience this whole series of ox herding pictures over and over. When we get a kind of insight, a resolution of something in our life, we can be kind of searching for it. We can awaken to it, we can see it, we integrate it, and then eventually it just becomes part of who we are, and we can just relax, like this the protagonist in this seventh picture is. So that's why I wanted to hopefully the dirt sender, did you hear my request to pen and paper? Cool. And then presumably those of you at home can do this. So it's going to take a few minutes, give you a few minutes to reflect on. So if we think of our path, our spiritual path, as steps on the path of growth and discovery, what is something you have learned over the course of your life? Not necessarily in the context of your Zen practice, that has significantly improved the way you live. So in this particular area, you, in a sense, you sought, you discovered the ox, you tamed the ox, you came home and integrated, and maybe even forgot about the ox. What you realized relieved some of your suffering, led to greater freedom, compassion, patience, etc. And when I say what is something you have learned, it's not that you have to necessarily be able to summarize it in a zippy phrase. I learned, da da da. But maybe just describing before and after. And when we reflect, I'm hoping people will share that you will give all of us the benefit of your insight, not as bragging, of course, but with humility, offering what you learned might help somebody else, or at least inspire somebody to keep searching for their own answers or resolutions. But it won't be necessary to share, of course. And maybe you won't be able in this few minutes to pull anything into consciousness, or you just don't feel like sharing, that's fine. So my example, and I'm going to take the risk of sharing an example. I mean, if in one sense I might kind of limit or skew what it is that you come up with, but on the other hand, sometimes people are frequently people are like, "What? What's the question?" So I figured I would share with you an answer that I would give to this. I would say, all my life up until I started practice, and then for a while, quite a while after, I'm very sensitive to criticism. I wouldn't show you that I was sensitive, right? I would get blustery and defensive or something like that. But actually internally, then once I went home, right, I would just be absolutely tormented by self-doubt. I mean, after all, how can you see your own blind spots? How can you know, what you don't know about yourself? And then if you get exposed a little bit to the teachings, and we're talking about the emptiness of self, then like how can you rely on, like what can where do you get your self-confidence if there's nothing in there that you can rely on? So if you tell me I'm insensitive and arrogant, maybe I am. Maybe everything I've assumed about myself is false. And in reality, I'm unlikable and unworthy of trust. So, gradually, and this is a difficult thing to describe, I guess, but I got in touch with a sense of my true self, for lack of a better word, but not a graspable self, right? My true self is this. My true self is good. My true self is whatever, intelligent, or my true self is this, but just a sense of being able to, at any given moment, to ask myself, how am I? And then be able to, like, I'm doing my best. I mean well. And recognize, like, this person has shortcomings. Everybody has shortcomings, makes mistakes, can be sorry for mistakes. But subsequently, after it kind of, it's really difficult to describe, right? It's not an intellectual thing. But after being able to become more familiar with and contact this other sense of myself, then criticism never again threatened me in that same way. Right? I could say, "Oh, I'm so sorry. You're right. That was terribly unskillful," or something. But I never questioned the inherent, said, goodness, it's a word, goodness of my own being. That kind of thing. Before we take a few minutes to do this, anybody have any questions about what I'm inviting you to reflect on? So when you are in the dirt sendo, when you are done, I mean, you don't have to use pen and paper, but I tend to find pen and paper helpful for this kind of reflection. You can just kind of like put your pen down when you're done, and anybody online, if you just want to put up some kind of, I don't know, maybe put up your raise hand or something just so that it says like you're done. All right, so I'll take a few minutes. I thought about, yeah, let's do this. I'm just gonna go down the list of cloud people, and then I'll trust you in the Zendo to go down the row. And you know, if you don't want to share anything, just make a show. But if you have something that you can share, your enlighten your little enlightenment, please do. So I, just going in order, I would call on Mark first.
Spent a great deal of my life feeling like I didn't belong, feeling like an outsider just about everywhere I went. And through the course of practice, I've realized that everything has an innate dignity. Everything comes by itself honestly. Even this guy. And that has led a lot of misery out of my life.
Paul, Brian.
Well, realization that it doesn't really matter. I am solely responsible for my state, no longer ashamed for my perceived inadequacies. Perceived is very important. It's my own perceived inadequacies. And becoming comfortable with who I am now. Getting more comfortable as time goes on, more and more comfortable.
Tyler.
Yeah, I maybe I don't know if I fully under or heard the question properly, but one thing that was really kind of changed, significantly changing my life was the learning and embracing of nonviolent communication. And it's particular lessons of like, if you haven't, there's this thing, giraffe ear and giraffe ears and jackal ears, and it's about how you hear the world and whether you're hearing them with your giraffe ears, because giraffes have the biggest heart in the whole animal kingdom. and are often considered very kind animals and jackals here. Anyway, so it's there's this whole way about how you listen and communicate with other people, and it was really life-changing in a lot of different aspects of my life, with my relationship and my partner. Like, we were both going through the same time, and non-violent doesn't necessarily mean, like, I wasn't a particularly violent with my language, abusive with my language, so it's not quite like that, but it's not that extreme, but that's just what it's called. But anyway, it changed the way in which I communicate with my partner, with children, all these sorts of things, and how I hear them. And it just was taught me a lot about how I was hearing everything in a real defensive way. And anyway, so that was, without going into too much more detail, that was pretty significant change in myself and my life. That takes practice and goes up and down.
Gathel?
Well, there's been a lot of things, but one recently, it's always Zazen has given a kind of a pace, a structure to life, but more so since I retired, since I have time to do Zazen much more. It's really provides structure and the kind of touchstones each day. That's one thing it's really providing me with now.
Susan?
Well, I thought of a few things that I've learned and I'm learning, continue learning even at my age. And one is I have learned to listen better. I always felt that when I was in conversation, I had to add something to show that I was smart or I knew something or to solve a problem. And maybe because of my daughter, who will say, "Just listen, Mom. I got just listen." And I'm still working on it and learning to just listen. And I'm still working on it. But it makes, I can hear people better then if I'm not always trying to think what I'm going to say.
John.
Can you hear me? All right. So, as I understand what you're asking, just things we've sort of figured out that have like become part of our being. And I guess I have a long list because there's lots of things, but I'm not going to go through the whole list. But things like don't take things personally or don't make assumptions. I mean, these are things that once you get it, you can see other people making assumptions, and you can see the benefit of not making assumptions or taking things personally. I guess the thing I'd really want to share the most would be just love unconditionally. And once you kind of get in that mode, it just makes everything better. And I see my kids having problems with people. Other people have to prove themselves first, and they just have, it's just a root of a lot of problems. And if you can love unconditionally, it really, really helps. So that'll be it.
Betty.
Hi, everybody. So mine's sort of specific, and I don't know if it's not as profound, but when I was still teaching, before I retired, I would just, I'd get up and lecture in front of 200 students. It's like I had terrible performance anxiety because of fear of, making a complete fool of myself, which probably happened, but that's okay. And also just kind of feeling less than, maybe not as confident as I could. So I had an hour commute, so I would be driving for an hour thinking about how bad I was going to do. But I realized that the event, but also the anxiety about it, sort of like two arrows, was just a moment in time. That was not a permanent moment, right? It was going to pass. And at 4 o'clock, that moment was no longer going to be, or at this time tomorrow, that moment was no longer going to be. So it wasn't really, it became sort of not being. It was just something that was no longer permanent. It was no longer real. And I could just let go of it. I could become not attached. So I realized sort of the impermanence of it, which allowed me to be less attached to the anxiety and to the event. So this was sort of pre-exploration into Zen. And I think that's why this practice resonates so much with me, is that all the teachings are sort of help reinforce that. But that really helped with my performance anxiety for the most part. Anyway, that's all. Thank you.
Thank you. Mick.
Mine is, I guess kind of similar to a lot of them. I guess I started learning this maybe when I was in high school, but I don't know, maybe it's the way I was raised, maybe it's who I am, but I started going through life like I was the main character and everyone else is like the supporting cast. And I had a couple of experiences where it really jarred me to see other people as full people with rich lives and hopes and dreams. And it's really hard to kind of accept that in your life, because I think on some level you're accepting that other people are just as important as you. And it's been a struggle. It still is, because, you know, I deal with people all the time. I deal with students all the time. And but I really try to, it has really been impactful to give everybody kind of the space that I would try to afford myself, and listen to them like a full person. And it can be really hard sometimes. But that has had a profound impact on me, just in terms of understanding the people that I'm interacting with.
Carson. Coral.
Yeah, I missed the prompt, so I'm like catching up via context, but I think I got it. And I'll try to say it coherently, but I used to take so many actions and worry about so many things that I now know were either just performative or just, you know, stressors put on me through things that weren't even real, just like societal pressures and stuff like that. And I'm sure I could think of so many more. Like, I think it got really serious. You know, I was taking up a lot of my life and I wasn't able to be who I really wanted to be or spend time on, you know, developing as a person. And I feel like Zen, it's just like all that performative stuff is like the icing, right? And I just got to just scrape that off the cake. And I remember my very first session, it was so brutal, but we were planning our wedding at the time. And the first like 24 hours was me just thinking about my wedding and how we have to do all these things and how can we afford to do all these things and the cake cutting and inviting my mom's friends and all this stuff. And then I realized like none of this shit matters, but like in a good way, in a really good way. And I just get to like, my actions have purpose and I know why I do them now. Most of the time, sometimes I catch myself, but yeah, that's my.
Dennis.
Honestly, I don't think I've seen the ox. I saw a tail once maybe, but not even close to seeing them or riding them. I did have a very good experience while on vacation. It was basically like a out of body experience where Everything was fine, but it was because I was on vacation and everything was fine. So there was no there was no profound realization attached. And as soon as I got off the plane and got back home, it went downhill fast. So, but at least I kind of got a glimpse of what it looked like, and what we'll strive for.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Ashley?
I wrote down that the aspects and part of myself that people don't see are not of lesser value than the things people see, nor do they lessen my value. I think for like as long as I can remember, since like childhood, I've been so obsessed with like the story of myself, and have carried around just a lot of feelings of guilt and shame. And I think that that has also led me to find it easy to judge others for the reasons I would judge myself. So I think letting go of the stories that I tell myself about my own being and of others being has led me to just a lot more self-acceptance and the practical application of that is that I just when I'm in a situation where I feel social anxiety or inferiority or stress or anything, I'm able to let that go a lot easier. And then when I feel myself judging others, I'm also able to recognize that there's so much of them that I don't understand, and that's a really a liberating thing, and it cultivates a lot of connection.
Phil?
The thing that came to mind first was something that's been this gradual process over, I'd say, the last 10 years or so. And seeing more and more how most of my life I've spent just so much time trying to get other people to see who I think I am and fighting their what I considered misconceptions of what I said or did or who, what kind of person I was. And it's an ongoing process, but it's come to a point where now just I'm just so much calmer about, just seeing that everybody I know sees me a little bit different and different at different times, and things change, and then just doing the practice is what, resulted in being able to see these things, because it's caused me over the past 10 or 12 years to just really look at everything. It's like there isn't just one ox, there's like 10,000 oxes. So anyway, that's what came to mind. Thank you.
Thank you. Bob.
Oh, this is such an interesting exercise. Thank you, Domio. I'll pick one thing that comes to mind. It's probably the most profound. What has changed me the most is that the streams of consciousness that I sense in my life, in my mind, are not unusual. And I can learn to manage them using techniques in Zazen to quiet my mind's churning of these thoughts. And this all results in calmness because I'm not panicked over, what does all this stuff mean? And I'll leave it at that.
That's great. Charles.
So mine isn't very like Zen per se, or seemingly all that profound, but the biggest thing that like has changed my life more than any other thing that I learned was when I started college. I had never really like worked out or anything like that, and my like the guy that lived across the hall from me got me into like took me to the gym for the first time, and basically like he showed me, he's like, if you have any trouble with any of these like things, you can watch like tutorials on YouTube. And he's like, you can basically learn anything on YouTube. And I'd known that, but I'd never really like practiced that. And then basically from then on, like it just changed my whole life to being more of like a learning mindset and being like, oh, I could basically learn anything. And like, I don't just have to be this person that doesn't know that thing. I could learn that and get to know that. But yeah, that was a big change in my life. Was it? If you have any question, ask YouTube.
Thank you. Candy? Are you there?
Yes, I'm undoing my things. So I had a few, and I don't know if they're all that great either. But you were saying things that are like the lessons that we learn repeatedly. One that took me, and so there are lessons that like I keep learning over and over, I guess. Everyone is not like you. Two, I don't know what I don't know, and that's okay. Three, the impermanency of self. Yet and still the permanence of self. It's weird, like, to describe it. It's just, it's the thing. Like, the enduring, like, it's hard to describe, but, like, I'm, it's, again, it, you said things that we're learning, like, over and over again. Yeah, those three things.
Ruth Ann.
Challenge of the practice is humbling for me. Like Pema Chodron asks, who is it who is sitting on the cushion? And I find that the practice allows me to be comfortably open to the don't know mind. It's really freeing. Thank you.
Thank you. All right, Dirt Zendo. And definitely come up to the questioner chair. From being in the cloud here, I tell ya, you guys, we can hardly see you guys. You guys are just like little blurry squish. That. So yes, it's nice to. There you are, Eric.
Hi, I'm Eric. Ashley, what you said was just beautiful, and I wish I had a tape recorder. It was very meaningful, and it kind of plays in to, I think, the biggest thing that I've learned that I keep learning and repeating to myself over and over again. And I learned it one night last fall after first coming to the Cloud Zendo. And I'd gotten done and I was sitting and I was thinking. And what I learned was to really forgive myself. And what I mean by that is to look deep inside and not just say or think I forgive myself, because I came from, and many of us have lots of guilt and shame. Ash talked about that. And lots of things in our lives or people in our lives bring that, and we carry that with us as, you know, permanent baggage. And we say things like, you know, I listened to Brene Brown, or, oh, Domio made this one comment, and, oh, I forgive myself, and it feels good or it sounds right. But what I did was to actually look inside and contemplate, well, what does it feel like to forgive yourself? What does it look like inside to forgive yourself? How would forgiveness change my perspective or my trajectory? And how would I want someone to respond or feel or react if I forgave them? And I contemplated those things, and then I started applying those things inside so that I wasn't just saying, I forgive myself, I don't have guilt, I don't have shame, but I started saying, wait a minute, I don't have to feel this way. And then I remove it and I stop. And then when I forget it, I come back and I do it again. And it's all about that. I wrote it here, it's all about the practice, practicing that on the inside so it doesn't become just lip service, even to yourself. So.
Hello, everyone. I think for sure for me, it would be learning how to respond rather than to react, if that makes any sense. Especially where it concerns all types of emotions. For me personally, especially anger, all types of other ones too, but anger has always been a problem for me. I remember a year and a half ago or so, we were doing breakout groups. And an example that I used one night was that I was working a job at one time where I was working as a cashier at a thrift store, and I would get a lot of very often very aggressive people. And for someone that already has a problem with anger and reaction, that was a challenge for me almost every day, sometimes several times a day. And me learning how to respond from a point of calm rather than reacting, because there really is a difference between response and reaction, at least that I've found. That's one of them. And another big one for me, with my struggles with mental health and OCD, was the very obvious, is not letting your thoughts in. And very similar to what Bob said, actually. Not letting your head get the best of you, I'm spinning out of control and realizing that these are just passing emotions, passing thoughts, passing, you know, states that you don't necessarily, there can be response rather than reaction to not only other people, but to inner conflict as well.
Yeah, so I talked with some people in the Sangha about this. I still don't like talking about it very openly, but when I was 5, I lost some of my hearing. I have a genetic hearing loss, and I got fitted with hearing aids the week before I started kindergarten. And the upshot of this was I was very, very, I had a lot of walls up, I guess, emotionally when I was a kid and in school. And I don't blame myself for that at all. I think it was a really smart survival tactic for a 5-year-old. But, you know, as time went on, and now especially in adulthood, what I found is the same things I was trying to do to protect myself was I was actually pushing other people away at the same time, like not necessarily the people that would have been mean to me no matter what because of that, but the people that were trying to care about me, I was pushing them away. And I guess I, you know, whenever I would try to talk about it with my parents, they'd be like, well, that's just the way things are and you shouldn't complain. And I guess I kind of, like, I heard that the royal family, their motto is never complain, never explain. And I was like, oh, I guess I was taught the same thing basically. And it wasn't until I became an adult that I realized like I wasn't just hurting myself doing this, I was also hurting people that were trying to care about me by doing this. And so it's still really hard. I feel like I'm pulling teeth when I do it, but I try to explain myself a little bit better now. Like, for example, I have a friend, she teaches Zumba, and I went to her class once 10 years ago, and I never went back because the music was really loud and I was terrified that it was going to make my hearing worse. And then, you know, she's like, why do you know you never came to my Zumba class again? And she was like really sad about it. And I was like, oh, I guess I never explained why I never went back. Like, I'm so used to like just shutting down and not explaining myself that I was like, oh, I... So then I explained to her, and then it's like, I should be doing that kind of stuff more often. So it's hard, but I'm trying.
Hi, I'm Stephanie. I think one of the biggest lessons that I've learned is if I have a perceived resentment or fear, it's looking at my part rather than looking at the part of the other person, and, you know, acknowledging what was my part in the situation, and then identifying, you know, what part of self was affected. Was it like my pride? Was it my personal relations? And then, you know, trying to figure out in the way that's best for me to prevent something like that from happening again, like what could I have done differently? And I think like, well, that's a big part of just my AA recovery program in general, but also it's a big part of what I've learned and here. And I think that has helped me tremendously because, you know, we talk about keeping my side of the street clean. And it really has helped me in the sense of being able to release, you know, perceived fears or perceived resentments. And then another thing that I've learned in here for like life lessons that I haven't really learned in any other things that I've studied is how to let go of attachments, that, you know, nothing is permanent. And that when we are able to let go of attachments, that's when we really become free. So that's all I have. Thank you.
Hello, everybody. I'm Isaac. What's going on? Most of you. Yeah, this is a little bit outside of my comfort zone, and I'll do my best. So when I joined Brightway a bit over a year ago, I came with a lot of grief. And last spring, when we had our spring retreat, I really connected with something. And that it was all life is precious, including me. And I don't mean precious in the sense of like gold or like that material type stuff. It's more like the way a parent holds a newborn child, that kind of preciousness. And reason why it was so huge for me is I've really struggled most of my life with feeling like I'm outside of life, and that I'm unworthy of basic love, care, and goodness. And it was just so moving. And it's something that's still unfolding through practice with everybody.
I mean, I think I was really busy all of my childhood and the early adult life to chase after being perfect or what I thought I should be to, you know, for people to think that I'm perfect. And only once I'll get there, I would accept myself and love myself and would be worthy of others' love. And it was exhausting. And I just gradually found a way that I don't have to be perfect, and it's okay that I'm imperfect, and it's okay that some people don't love me, and it's okay that I'm sometimes unperforming in whatever things in. And it's okay that I'm work in progress, and I get to choose to grow if I want, but I also get to choose just to be imperfect and accept myself the way I am. Yeah, and this is very relieving to know that it's fine. Yeah.
I'm Natalie. Wrote quite a bit. Let's see if I can summarize. But you know, basically for me, I had a very profound experience at the age of 18. I was in college and had what I would describe as just a existential crisis, just this big breakdown. And what I realized is I wasn't who I thought it was. And I wasn't who other people, who society thought I was. And this whole realization came suddenly. I remember the moment walking on this campus, and it came crashing down all at once. And when it hits so quickly, it's really disconcerting. Like I didn't know actually how I was going to even move through this at this point. It was like this dissolution of self. And it was terrifying. It was just absolutely horrifying because I didn't know who I was. I just knew, you know, I grew up programmed. It felt like that programmed to be someone based on all my external behaviors of, you know, you are a student, you are an achiever, and you are doing this, and all these things that were defining who I was. And that when the realization came that that wasn't me, and I didn't know what I was left with. And so I had to work, you know, pulling myself out of this very dark place. But when I came out of that, it was just really the beginning of this path of exploration that I'm still on. And it's so, I guess it was, you know, seeing the ox, the glimpse of it, of just knowing there was something more, what it was I was searching for. And but I was actively at that point, you know, there's a lot more joy in just exploring, even if I didn't have the answer. You know, I started exploring different spiritual traditions and engaging a lot more in art and music and just exploring. And I'm still on that path. Yeah, because it's, I don't, how often people just find that while we're here. But even being on that path towards liberation has been liberating, knowing that. So thank you.
Hi, Mark. My glimpse of the ox, I think, was the realization through Zen, through study of Zen, the sudden realization that the only reality is this immediate present moment, and that all of us are, and I shared similar things as we all do, all of these stories we tell ourselves about ourselves, mostly negative stories, and the realization that these are all just stories that we construct that aren't really what we are. And you can tell yourself a different story, but beyond a different story, you can just have no story. You are just breathing in and breathing out, and you're here, and there's no story. And that's something I learned over and over. And it's a very comforting place to be. It's a safe place. Thank you.
everybody to work.
Hopefully, keep it short.
Now the chair is in the right spot. That's it. Let's start the last.
I wanted to keep it simple, but I haven't shared too much since I joined the group, and I felt I needed to say something meaningful to this question that it's very important. So I'll try to be as honest as possible. I feel like the drawings are amazing, but they're missing a couple, like the ox charging at you, the ox coming and stomping you, and you're still not seeing the ox. I think those are missing. I didn't see the ox for a long time, even though it charged at me and it stomped me. I grew up with an alcoholic father, and there was a lot of violence at home. And I think the ox was there now. And I want to credit a couple of people and the reason for why I'm here. But the pivotal moment is never, in my opinion, never when you turn the paddle, when you see the ox. The ox charged at me, stomped at me in the form of my mother passing suddenly about 20 years ago. And still I didn't quite see the ox. And the ox was there in the words of my mother before she passed, and telling me that the key was in healing the relationship with my father. And still didn't see the ox. And her passing was the stomping that finally led me to see the ox. And the people, the reason why I'm here, and one primarily, is a personality that you probably all know. His name is Wayne Dyer, or was Wayne Dyer. And he is a PBS personality, somebody who sells books, sure. But for me, that was me seeing the ox for the first time, realizing that the words of my mother were the key. And I finally saw a glimpse of the ox, and I realized that the ox had actually stomped and trampled me. And I was destroyed in that moment, listening to the words of this man on this TV, who I didn't know, is speaking about me, realizing that it was all up to me. And it began a journey of healing the relationship with my dad, forgiving him, truly, genuinely forgiving him, letting him own his own faults, forgiving myself, finally beginning to move on. This is 20 years now in the making. And the reason why I'm here is because of that man, and subsequently somebody else in another book, Daniel, even said Eckhart Tolle. Mm-hmm. Not everybody has their opinions about him, but you know, they are signposts. He opened up my mind about it now, and the reason why I'm here again is because he brought that ox to me, along with Wayne Dyer. And I finally was able to begin healing with my dad. And that, whether it was the death of my mother, or watching this man on TV, or reading that book, that was my pivotal moment. Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Thank you all for your sharing. Wow. I remember when I was a teenager, 17, 18 years old or so, and speaking of the stories that society tells you, I was told a story that this was it. now. Now I was an adult, and it was just kind of like, now you just kind of like pick what career you're going to have, and it's all the same from here. And that was very disappointing. And I wish I could go back and tell young folks, like, we don't stop growing. No, we don't stop learning. It's continuous. It keeps going. And it only keeps getting better, in my opinion. So yes, what great wisdom we have in our Sangha. Dedicate the merit of this Sangha meeting to all, so that they may be able to obtain the truth. All Buddhas throughout space and time, all honored ones, Bodhisattvas, Mahasattvas, wisdom beyond wisdom, Maha Prajna Paramita.
Good night, everybody.
Good night, everyone.
Good night. Thank you.